There's a lot of options.
Yeah, totally. There's tons of options. And I didn't even talk about condoms. I didn't even talk about barrier methods, which is kind of the other group.
Hello and welcome to Her Kind of Healthy, a health podcast series brought to you by Sanford Women's. I'm your host, Courtney Collin with Sanford Health News. We want to start new conversations about age-old topics from fertility to managing stress, healthy living, and so much more. Her Kind of Healthy is designed to bring you honest conversations about self-care, happiness, your overall well-being with our Sanford Health experts.
On this episode, we are talking about birth control or contraception, the use of medication, devices, or procedures to prevent pregnancy. And there are so many different types. For a lot of us, it can be very overwhelming. So let's bring in Dr. Amy Kelly, who is an OBGYN at Sanford Health and a specialist in pediatric and adolescent gynecology. If you ask me, the perfect person to have this conversation with, Dr. Kelly. Welcome. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
So let's start with the basics. We have a lot to get to, but what exactly does birth control do physiologically in the body to prevent a pregnancy?
It depends a little bit on what method you're talking about, on how it prevents pregnancy. Things that are fairly common and have been around for a while, like birth control pills or the birth control patch, they work by kind of taking the job of the ovary away. So they basically give you a little bit of estrogen and a little bit of progesterone every day. And that makes you not ovulate. So it kind of takes the ovary's job and says, you don't have to do anything right now. And it kind of keeps your hormones basically very similar from day to day.
So how would a young woman or women of any age know what birth control is right for them and where do they even begin?
Well, there's actually a few really good online resources to kind of do a little bit of looking around on your own. The one I like the most is called bedsider.org, and it's an app as well. And I like that one because it's not from a company. Like it's actually run by a nonprofit. So you know they're not trying to sell you anything. They're just trying to give you information. But otherwise, I would say going to your physician is a great place to start as well. What you do for contraception, I think, varies a lot depending on what stage you are in your life and what you need. Some people, you know, are using contraception more because their periods are bothering them, especially in the teen years. And they may want something different then than what they want maybe when they go to college and their life is busy and they have to worry more about the contraception or the pregnancy prevention part maybe then. And they also, maybe their life's a little crazy because they're in college and they can't remember their pill anymore. So I think that what you do varies a lot based on your personality and also what stage of your life you're in.
Now let's talk through some of the options. Explain some of the various types that are available.
Yeah, so I kind of put things into different categories. So I put things into high maintenance and low maintenance categories because that's kind of how I roll. I like low maintenance things. So the things in the low maintenance category are also a little bit more effective to prevent pregnancy. So that's kind of a good category for people who are most concerned about that. It's also a great category for people who need low maintenance options where you don't have to think about them very often. So the two big ones in that category are the implant that goes in your arm. And I actually have one right here. You're probably going to be kind of hard to see it since I have just such a little screen, but it's very small. It's really, really tiny and it's and it goes under the skin in your arm, and that works for about 4 years. And it is the most effective thing for contraception. It has a failure rate of 0.5% in 1,000. So it's like right up there with getting your tubes tied or doing something permanent. The other one that's very similar in effectiveness is IUDs. There's a couple of different kinds of IUDs, but IUDs stand for intrauterine device. And it's a T-shaped device that goes in the uterus. They're also quite small. So this is an example of one right here. They're not very big.
Wow, that is small.
Yeah, they're pretty small. And intrauterine devices come in a couple different flavors. There's one that doesn't have any hormones at all, and that has copper in it. And that works by causing some inflammation in the uterus, but it also works because copper makes sperm unable to penetrate eggs. So it actually prevents the process of fertilization. The copper IUD is good for 12 years. It's good for a very long time. That one doesn't really change your periods. It can make them a little heavier and more painful sometimes because it causes inflammation. But otherwise, you have regular periods with it. The two hormonal IUDs that are used the most often, there's one called the Kylena, and there's the Mirena. The generic of the Mirena is called the Lyletta. And those work for 5 years and 8 years. And hormonal IUDs have just a little bit of progesterone in them. So they make the lining of the uterus really, really thin. And some people actually don't have periods with them because they just don't have a lining to shed very often because it's so thin. So Kylenas are smaller. They're the five-year one. And they're made specifically and FDA approved for people who haven't had children. The Mirena and Lyletta is just a tiny, tiny bit bigger, and it's good for 8 years. And it's specifically FDA approved for people who have had children. Now, we have lots of studies that show that people, whether or not you've had a child, can use either one of these. But the company just hasn't gotten FDA approval for both of them for both kinds of people. But those are all very low maintenance options. And they work really well for contraception. The downside to the hormonal ones is that they can make your period kind of wacky. And that's a little bit different for every person. For IUDs, a lot of people don't have periods at all. And if they do, they're pretty light, maybe a little sporadic. For the one in your arm, about 1 in 3 women don't have any periods. And then everyone else has periods, and they can be kind of crazy and long, but not usually heavy or painful, but they can also just be spotting every couple of months. So it varies a lot. And those are probably the main side effects that we talk about when we talk about using those for people. But those are our low maintenance options where you don't even have to think about them. You put them in, you're done. Our kind of medium range options that I think are pretty low maintenance, but you have to remember more often, is Depo. Depo is a shot, and you get it every 3 months. You have a little wiggle room. It's every 10 to 13 weeks. And most people, it stops their period, actually, because it's also a bunch of progesterone, so that lining gets really thin. Depo is kind of in that medium range because you only have to remember it every 3 months. For some people, that's great, and it's good. Other people, it's easier to remember things every day than every 3 months. Everybody's a little different. So that's kind of a medium range option. The most high maintenance options are the birth control pill, which you take every day, the patch, which you change once a week, and something called the birth control ring. There's a couple of different kinds of the ring. And you change that once a month. So those are a little bit higher maintenance because you have to remember them more. And you have to go to the pharmacy and you have to get refills on them. And if you move or if you're in college, you have to figure out how you're going to get those refills. So those are just a little bit more like time consuming and you have to think about them a little more. Those are the only ones that keep your period really regular though too. And a lot of times they have really nice side effects. Most of them help with acne. A lot of them help with if we feel kind of moody around our period, a lot of them help with that. So those are pretty popular ones and they've been around for a long time too. Those have a much higher failure rate though. The failure rate for those is about 70 in 1,000 versus like 2 for IUDs in 1,000 or a half a person for the one in your arm.
There's a lot of options.
Yeah, totally. There's tons of options. And I didn't even talk about condoms. I didn't even talk about barrier methods, which is kind of the other group. Condoms are also definitely contraception because they prevent sperm from getting to eggs. Yeah. But they're kind of the most high maintenance option, really.
Sure.
Because they don't work in your drawer or in your purse or in your truck. They only work if you use them every single time.
Yes.
But they are also the only method that helps protect you from things like gonorrhea and chlamydia. And so they're a super important option, particularly in our state that's really having a surge of different STI infections right now.
And a great way to get the partner involved too. I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
They got to do their part.
Yeah. I mean, it is unfortunate that there aren't very many options for males, right? At least not reversible options for males. There's sure. always been talk of getting reversible options for males, but they just never seem to let come to fruition. So
what are some factors, Dr. Kelly, that might determine what is right for each patient? I mean, does age come into play, health history, sexual activity, maybe having had previous children? Talk through some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. Certainly, what you want after children sometimes is different than what you want before you have children. But I tend to, and everybody's a little bit different. So of course there's lots of different factors, but I tend to try to talk to people about two big ones to try to pick what they want to do. And those two big ones would be, what do you want your period to be like, or what can you handle as far as your period goes, and how important contraception is to you. And I try to stick with those two things because there's just so many other factors too. But the reason why I think those two play a big role is because these kinds of options vary a lot on how effective they are. So I think, and having or getting pregnant is a huge thing, changes your whole life. And so, you know, how worried you are about that is a very big determining factor on what option you choose. And most of these affect your period. Now, they usually affect your period in good ways. With our high maintenance options like the pill, the patch, the ring, most people's periods get shorter, they're less crampy, and sometimes they're a lot lighter as well. But you still have them every month. There are ways to kind of skip and manipulate your period with them, but you have very regular periods. And for some people, that's super important, and that's what they're looking for. With our low maintenance options, you're getting much better contraception, but you may have periods that are irregular and not as predictable. You might also not have a period at all. And sometimes that's people's goal, is to not have a period. And, maybe because they don't like it. Like a lot of our autistic, teenagers have, like, it's a sensory thing that they don't like, or sometimes it's because they're super busy with a sport and they don't want to deal with that period. Sometimes it's because they miss school because it's so painful or so heavy every time. And so we're trying to have them have less periods. There's really good reasons to consider not having a period for some people. But if that's their goal, then I'm going to recommend different things than if they want regular periods or if they can handle a little bit of irregular bleeding. Sometimes that drives some people crazy. So I think knowing a little bit about how you're going to feel is a good way to kind of figure out what might be a good option for you.
Are there any risks that a patient should consider before choosing a birth control, or any specific risks behind any of those types of birth controls?
Yeah, so the ones that are high maintenance, pills, the patch, the NuvaRing, there's more than just the NuvaRing, so I should just say the ring. But those three have estrogen in them. And estrogen does have the potential risk of blood clots, which is, you know, a serious risk. It's not a very common one. But there are some people who have medical conditions or who have certain genetic issues that make them too high risk to use estrogen. So there are some women who are not good candidates for those three options because they shouldn't use estrogen. The other ones have other risks. You know, certainly any medication has some risks. People can have things like stomach upset, you know, headaches, nausea, nausea. But most of the time, any of those types of side effects, you always have to compare them to what the alternative is too. So if the alternative is the potential to get pregnant, pregnancy has a lot of complications and side effects too. And so most birth control, if you're comparing it to pregnancy, is much safer than pregnancy. But there are some people have some mood changes because it's with hormonal options, or DEPO is associated with weight gain in some people. And so those kind of side effects vary from person to person, but we always discuss that with people so that they know if they have them, what to do, and, you know, if we think they're likely to have them or not.
If an individual is planning to get pregnant, but they've been on birth control for a period of time, be it the more high maintenance options, a pill, or something more low maintenance like the ring or IUD, is there a period of time that they would need to be off the birth control before successfully conceiving? And is it different based on the type of birth control? Can we talk through that for a moment?
Yeah, you actually don't have to wait at all. It's a little bit of an urban myth that you have to wait a couple months when you go off of the pill or go off of really any birth control. I've had plenty of people who we pulled their IUD and they never even got a period. They got pregnant instead. So it can happen rather rapidly. Yeah, almost all of our methods of birth control are once you take them out or once you stop taking them, your fertility comes back very quickly. The exception to that is Depo-Provera, the shot. That can take 6 months to a year to wear off. So that isn't a great option for people who think they're wanting to have children soon, because it can take a while to wear off. Now, I've also had people who have gotten pregnant on it because Depo has a failure rate. So that's not a universal truth, but it can take a while to wear off. The Nexplanon also can take a few months to wear off. But I've had people also get immediately pregnant with that. So it does vary a little from person to person. But yeah, there's not really, that's an urban myth that you have to wait. You can definitely start trying right away.
Well, thanks for clearing the air on that. I appreciate it. Now, speaking of myths or misconceptions, are there any that you hear of about different birth controls, either the types or things you're seeing on social media, any fear that you hear of? Talk about that.
All the time. And, you know, when you think about birth control as something that 90% of women, you know, take or use in their lifetime, and women make up more than 50%, you know, 50, 52% of the population, it's no wonder there's all these myths. Because when so many people are using something like contraception, it's very easy to blame contraception for lots of common things, whether it causes that or not. So the things that I often hear about, so one of the biggest concerns I get from parents a lot of times is, will this affect fertility in the future? There's this myth that, like, you take the pill for 10 to 15 years, and then when you go off of it, you can't get pregnant anymore, or Depo, or whatever it is that you're on. And that really is very much an urban myth. The biggest issue with fertility nowadays is actually age. So if you're on the pill for 15 or 20 years, you're trying to get pregnant in your 30s, maybe even your late 30s. And it's much harder to get pregnant as you get older. So I think that's a common misperception. And it really is just, and it's based on some other things. It's not, you know, it's not a crazy thing to think by any means. But I hear that a lot. The other thing I hear a lot is that contraception, especially hormonal contraception, makes you gain weight or it makes you crazy. And there's a kernel of truth to that as well, because some people do gain weight with hormonal birth control and some people do think it affects their mood. But lots of other things in life do that to us too. You go to college, a lot of people gain the freshman 15. College is super stressful. People have lots of anxiety when they're at college, especially that first year. And so sometimes those things aren't just from birth control, but it can be really hard to tell. Regardless, if you think your birth control is causing some of that. It's not something that we hear very often. I would put it in the like under 5% category. So if you look at all kinds of birth control, a small number of people might have those side effects. But really, if that's the case, switching to a different method usually will fix that. So it doesn't mean you can't have any kind of birth control if you have one that you don't like or doesn't work well for you. The one birth control that consistently is associated with weight gain in studies is Depo. And the average weight gain with Depo is 5 pounds. And about 10 to 20% of people gain weight with Depo. So, you know, if you think about that being the only one that consistently shows that, that's kind of worst case scenario. So really all the other ones are probably much better. Okay. For most people.
Yeah. Good to know the risks or side effects, I guess, before you go in.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk to people about those. I think that, you know, we're very open with what people might potentially experience. On TikTok lately, there's been a lot of stuff about IUDs and how horrible they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's quite a bit of fear around getting IUDs for some people too. And the interesting thing about IUDs is how much the experience varies from person to person. I do think that they can be uncomfortable and crampy. I myself have 3 IUDs and this is my 3rd one. And I really don't like getting them because they are kind of yucky to get, but it's also like less than a minute. And, you know, there are things we can do to make it better. There's medicine we can give you beforehand if you're anxious. There's medicine we can give you that kind of helps the cervix be a little bit more open to putting an IUD in. And we even sometimes put people to sleep for IUD placements if they're really anxious or if they have a history of trauma. Or for kiddos who maybe can't cooperate with an exam, like children or teens who have developmental delays and things like that. But there are definitely things we can do to make it better. And I have some people, I had a teenager just the other day, 16, who did way better than I did with my last IUD insertion. So it does vary a lot from person to person. But most people can get through it.
Yeah, good to know. Now, how young is too young to start on a birth control and what to consider there? Because, and then, you know, how old is too old to continue birth control? Can you talk about age a little bit?
Yeah, so really once you have your period, you could be on something for birth control.
Okay, so as early as 11, 12?
You know, even 9, 10, because like some young ladies do get their period as early as 9 or 10, especially African-American teens and Hispanic teens sometimes get theirs a little early. But there are some special considerations in young people. There's the potential for a little bit of loss of height in that first year. After you get your period, you can still grow a little bit. So, you know, we don't have great studies to prove that if you take estrogen, that it makes you not grow as much, but there's that concern. So sometimes we start out with things that don't have estrogen in young ladies who just started their period. But really, if you're having problems with your period or if contraception is needed, then it's really as soon as you get your period, we can be helping you with that if it's an issue. As far as how old you can be, it's unlikely, but you can get pregnant all the way up until menopause. So I think it's important for our, you know, perimenopausal women to understand that, you know, once you hit 40, doesn't mean you can't get pregnant anymore. And so it's important to still use contraception if you need it. And it depends on what method you're using. Estrogen, as you get older, things with estrogen do start having a little bit more risk. But if you are someone who can still take estrogen, you can take it until menopause. You can take birth control pills till menopause. If you have a reason why we think estrogen is not a good idea, you develop hypertension, or, you know, you've had a blood clot or something, then there are other methods. There are those methods that don't have estrogen that you can use.
Okay, so different factors. Let's talk through some of those that might affect the success or effectiveness of any method of birth control.
There are some medications that do affect birth control and how effective it is for contraception. Okay. So it's really mostly our estrogen containing birth control methods. So the pill, the patch, the ring, that are affected by, other medications. So some of those medications can include seizure medications, and antibiotics, but there's actually only a couple of antibiotics that really affect, contraception. And they're actually antibiotics for tuberculosis. So one of them is called rifampin. So most of your antibiotics you're going to get for like an ear infection or strep throat or sinusitis or a yeast infection is not going to impact your contraception method, even if it is a pill, a patch, or a ring. But again, there are some medications, and those would be the two big ones that are common, would be a handful of antibiotics and anti-seizure medications.
Okay. How long should a patient be on any specific birth control before they might be able to switch, or something not working out? Or are there some that are riskier to be on for a long period of time?
The vast majority of them, it's fine to be on for a long period of time. There is kind of this myth about Depo that you can only be on it for 2 years, because there is a slight risk of some bone loss with Depo Provera. However, that bone loss is not associated with broken bones or like hip fractures, wrist fractures, anything like that. And in fact, with Depo, for 2 years, you lose a little bit of bone and then it stabilizes. So if you've already been on it for 2 years, there's actually no really good reason to quit unless you just don't like it or don't want to use it anymore. And the amount of bone you lose is about the same as you would if you had a baby and then breastfed for a year. Because you lose some bone and some calcium from those things as well. So we don't really consider it to be a risk that would make us not want to do it in most people.
What are some questions that maybe a young woman and her mom or her parents or a woman and her partner should ask their OBGYN or their provider during the appointment when they're discussing these different options, and or any questions that you get that you would suggest listeners consider before beginning a method?
Yeah, I think it's really important to be honest with the person that you're seeing, with your provider. And, you know, that can be hard in front of parents specifically. Sometimes, like, if you really need contraception, but maybe your parents aren't aware of the fact that you need contraception. I always think it's better to have parents involved in these conversations, but, you know, it is okay to talk to your provider alone if you feel like that is appropriate and you need to. In fact, most providers, I think, do talk to teenagers alone for at least a little bit. We do need parental permission in South Dakota to give adolescents any medication, and that does include contraception. There are some ways around that, but in general, that is required. So it can be a little bit of walking a tightrope sometimes in my shoes when you're trying to not out a teenager that might be sexually active, but also make sure they're getting what they need. And I feel like that's a conversation between the parent and her teenager. My goal as a provider is to be a person that can give someone information and make sure they have the information they need to make good choices for themselves. But I think that being honest is important, because you want to be honest about, are you at risk for sexually transmitted infections, so that we can talk to you about condom use if that's an important piece of this. And do you need contraception, or really are we just trying to get your period better? Like, what is your main concern and reason for contraception? I think that those are things that are really important, is just being honest. You also want to make sure that we know and are aware of all the other medicines that you're taking to make sure that we don't have any interactions, and also to make sure that what we're giving you is safe, and that you don't have these risk factors that would make us not want to give you estrogen. But I think that really there are no dumb questions. You know, I think that if you have concerns or you've heard rumors about birth control and you are worried about something specifically, just ask us. I mean, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. And we're so thankful to have you and other physicians and providers and a whole care team to be there when we're considering these big decisions. Dr. Kelly, thank you so much for your insight on this topic and all that you do for patients at Sanford Health. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much. It was great to be here.
Thank you.